You're listening to Extra Time Radio.
David Goss is in my house. I will not let him sit on the furniture.
No.
He's sitting on the floor right now. Yeah. He doesn't get to have a chair anymore.
That's what I'm willing to do.
Hat trick for Deuce. 2 hat tricks in 4 games.
Are you watching the games? Are you just looking at the stats?
Hodgepodge.
Yeah, there's a Modge Podge. Whole Modge Podge of rumors.
This is a transfer Modge Podge.
It is an ungodly mess.
Yeah. I'm just trying to think about what I want to say.
That's why he's here!
Oh, from New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time Radio on MLSsoccer.com and SiriusXM FC Channel 85. I am Andrew Wiebe with me in our latest green room because we are podcasting vagabonds. Dave Goss, what's up, man?
Nothing. It's a lot of soccer.
Yeah.
It's a lot of good stuff. I wasn't ready.
Your brain is like a little bit behind the eight ball right now.
I wasn't ready. I'm not prepared. No, I'm excited. It's been fun doing a couple of these different, shows. It's like you're still paying attention to the games and preseason and formations and teams, but then we come on, we don't talk about it.
No. We're talking tactics with Caleb Porter. Or we just get Alexi on to just BS about designated players. Yeah. It's been fun. It's been really fun. And I have a hard time with preseason because sometimes the tendency is to take too much away from it. You watch these games, you're like, Kevin Molino's going to score. He's going to go 15-15.
But you would have said that anyway.
Probably. Like, hot boy, I just always come back to it. Like, come on, there's a reason there. But, yeah, you got to take it with
Joseph Martinez might.
I did just pick Joseph Martinez to be a possible Golden Boot winner.
Oh, is that the player I didn't expect?
Yeah, was it not?
I don't know. That was your title.
That was the column, yeah.
Yeah.
You expected it?
I pick it right now out of nowhere. I would say Ola Kamara is going to win Golden Boot.
Hey, that's what I said.
And is the man.
Hey, go check out the article at MLSsoccer.com. He mentioned all these podcasts, and you're sitting here thinking, well, we just got the one special with Steve Bernasconi, which, by the way, go listen to that. At the Soccer Tour on Twitter if you want to follow it.
He started today. Yeah. I saw him tweet a picture of him at the Everglades.
He also reports that the podcast he did with us has gotten him a bunch of places to stay, possibly some free meals, maybe a few free drinks.
ETR
so
family.
That's awesome. ETR, all the listeners out there, you're the best. We love you. But you're going to love us even more next week. Another ETR extravaganza is coming before opening day on March 3rd. The rundown here for you. On Monday, we're going to do our Eastern Conference preview. Guess who's jumping on with that? Jesse Marsh. We've got a long interview with the Red Bulls head coach. Of course, they're the team everybody's trying to knock off that perch. On Tuesday, it's all about how to follow MLS in 2017. What's the logistical side of this? What's the practical side? What's the fun stuff you can do as a fan? We're going to have Mark McClure on to talk MLS Live, what you can get from that. Talk fantasy with Ben the Research Bear. John Strong will be joining us to talk about the broadcasting side. It's going to be a lot of fun. I'm still upset. We're still behind this week in MLS. We're still behind the Octagon. We didn't invite Matt Doyle on this show because of that. So go check that out and join our league, 12-308. On Wednesday, referee special, Peter Walton. You know him. He'll kind of get you up to date on what's going on that side. Thursday, Western Conference preview. And Friday, this is the one we need help on. That's our prediction show. Matt Doyle will be in the office. We'll get Ben Bear on here. We want your creativity to drive us. So come up with some fun predictions, come up with some fun hot takes, do whatever you got to do. We'll talk about all that, but we got a show to do today, and it's all about the supporters. It's not about us. We're barely going to talk. Like, I feel like our show is over. It should be over, right?
Yeah, we're on vacation now. You guys get to run this show, but that's the best part about MLS is like they're, yes, you have fans, right? But it's like, oh, I wonder what's happening with the Charlotte Hornets. Who are you going to talk to? But like, because of MLS, because of supporters groups, they've created
soccer culture.
Because of the soccer culture, there's voices. Not that there's figureheads, right, or a voice that speaks for everyone, but there's a way, especially for people that aren't fans, to get involved. And there's an obvious part.
There's organization.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's organization.
It's nice.
It is. We're going to talk to 5 different fans in this episode. Bruce McGuire, supporters. I'm sorry, supporters. You've been whipping that into me here today,
and
Dave.
Clearly not hard enough.
Bruce McGuire of Minnesota United. You may know him as Do Nord on Twitter. He's a founding member of the Dark Clouds, one of the supporters groups up there. Of course, a big year coming up for Minnesota. We'll talk to a fan from Atlanta United, Andrea Bustamante, who's their outreach coordinator there at the Terminus Legion. That'll be cool. Mike Coleman of the Timbers Army will join us to talk TIFO. Jerry Updike, the president of the Ruckus down there in Orlando, He's got a lot to talk about.
Good
the
dude.
Wall is about to get going. And then you probably know Mark Fishkin if you follow MLS, certainly if you're on Twitter. Seeing Red New York is his podcast, is his brand. But before that, he was a season ticket holder all the way from the beginning. All the
Not
way
before
since,
that, still.
Yeah, before that in 96. So we're going to talk to all these folks. We're going to find out what's going on the ground. We're going to lead you into 2017. And we're going to start with Bruce McGuire. He is on the phone now, one of our favorites here on Extra Time Radio. Bruce, how's it going, man?
It's fantastic. Really good to talk to you guys.
For sure. And we're approaching the first ever MLS game for Minnesota United FC, the first game of the season, March 3rd, this Friday, or I should say next Friday, actually, against the Portland Timbers in Portland, 9:30 p.m. Eastern on FS1. Tell us what it's like in Minnesota right now. In Minneapolis, in the Twin Cities, is the buzz picking up? What's the feeling on the ground?
Some days it's hard to tell because I live in a slight bubble. You know, when you're really a passionate soccer fan, you meet a lot of fellow passionate soccer fans, and therefore you kind of get into this little trance of knowing everything that's going on, and their excitement jumps to you and your excitement jumps to them, and your friends and family that maybe aren't huge soccer fans still always pay attention because of your energy. So some days I feel like I live in a bubble. There's other days when, even just in America in general, I feel like, does anybody know what soccer is yet? And it kind of makes me laugh. But there was a little bit of information that came out the other day in the St. Paul Pioneer Press that suggested that they were going to get about 35,000 people to the first game. And that kind of blew me away because I don't feel that kind of buzz overall in the Twin Cities.
Bruce, tell me what the journey has been like to get here. You've been in and around MLS, North American soccer, for an awful long time. You were a founding member of the Dark Clouds, one of the supporters groups up there. This has been a long time coming for Minneapolis and St. Paul, no?
Well, it is, but the one thing that all of us knew all along is we were never going to go anywhere else without proper ownership. And we always had pretty shady shaky, you know, seat of the pants ownership. There was times when this club had six full-time staff members for the whole team. That was it. And 27 years of history can seem like a long time, but in reality, it's only been the last 4 or 5 years when there's been true ownership of the club that had deep pockets and a master plan. So, yeah, I just assumed that there should be Major League Soccer in the Twin Cities, but I wasn't sure when and or if it was going to happen. So it didn't feel like this was inevitable. Our hope and dreams around here every year after the end of the season was, will our team take the field next spring? And it always did, which is pretty cool, but we never knew.
What's the supporters culture like? What are the people around you like? Who's playing the sport? Who's watching the sport in the city? What should other fans expect if they come to an away game at Minnesota?
It's pretty damn passionate. I mean, we see that in a lot of places now, which is really awesome. It started as a very small group of people who just wanted to bond in a different way than rather just sit in the stands on our own or with a friend or two. And it happened kind of naturally, but now it's become, like so many other places, a real unified effort with membership and big numbers and all the things that you see at many other stadiums. I don't think there's anything surprising or radically different here. It is really strong. The one thing that I love that's more personal to me is that our supporters' culture in the Dark Clouds is very community-driven. We do projects all the time, volunteerism. We just sent a group of people to Haiti on a week-long volunteer program, and they came back with amazing footage that we're going to produce into almost like a trailer, if you will, like a movie trailer to encourage fans from all over the country to join us next year when we go again. And those are the things that I like the most. I mean, I have close friendships with some of these people that I never would have had if it wasn't for soccer.
Are you going to Portland, Bruce? I have to imagine that you are, man.
I am. I got really lucky. I have to admit that I have a patron that is allowing me to go to Portland, which is pretty great.
A patron.
So I'm ecstatic to be there.
What is this season going to be like for you? Are there points that are you're most excited for? I know that the new stadium likely won't come online until 2019, probably. You guys will be playing there at the University of Minnesota, where the Vikings have been and where the Gophers play as well. What are kind of the points this season that you're looking forward to, the little moments, the big moments, the things that you've kind of circled on your calendar?
I mean, I only have two dates circled right now. It's the first game in Portland and the second game, which is at home against Atlanta. And for the most part, the opponents don't matter on either game, even though they are really important in another way. I just am curious to see my fellow Twin Cityans' reaction to a team in Major League Soccer. I don't know what to expect. Honest to God, I have no idea what to expect. There's part of me is still the dread, like no one will be there. And then I get these little hints and these little whispers that things are going well. And I get excited that, you know, okay, this is going to be great. It's going to be better than I even hoped. Sometimes I can be a bit of a pessimist, so it's hard to really know. But that's my hope. After those first two games, I think I'm going to have to regroup and come up with a whole new plan, strictly as a fan. But Portland is really important because for many, many, many years in the second division, they were a big rival for Minnesota. So to the people who have been fans for 20 years, this means a lot. And Seattle needs a lot, and Montreal needs a lot, and Vancouver needs a lot. These were our old rivals for a long time, and those are all going to be important games to people like me.
So you think these rivalries, and this is a big part of MLS these days, and certainly the league pushes it through Heineken Rivalry Week. You think those will come from the second division days? I mean, who do you foresee being the teams that people really get jacked up for?
You know, it's honestly, it's completely impossible to know. It's easy to get jacked up by teams who create their own atmosphere, even away from home. So there won't be a problem creating an energy toward, like, say, Orlando, that has a great energy coming off them. Coming into the league with Atlanta will definitely create an energy. And then there is Los Angeles, there is Seattle, there is Portland. And then the team closest to us is Kansas City, and we have a great relationship, you know, on a micro level with supporters from Kansas City, because we've been going to each other's stadiums to play games, you know, usually in the Open Cup for a long time, and we've built up a great camaraderie. And there's also a thing, too, where a lot of fans in Minnesota have gone to U.S. national team games for decades and have built a great reputation as being really good people and really good ambassadors. And there's very few places that I go to a game where I'm not received really well as, oh, yeah, people from Minnesota, people from the Dark Clouds, et cetera, et cetera. You guys are awesome. Welcome. So I think there's going to be more of that than any of that rivalry. You know, the rivalries happen when they happen. You can't predict or try. So I'm anxious. I mean, really, I want the season to start tomorrow, and I want to be in the stadium here in the Twin Cities and just watch it unfold.
It'll start on Friday, March 3rd, of course, in Portland, 9:30 p.m. Eastern on FS1, the very first regular season game of 2017. Before we let you go, Bruce, on the field, are you excited? Are you worried? Are you nervous? What do you think about this team's chances in their first year in MLS?
Yeah, that's the one question none of us can answer right now. I mean, there are some really exciting players. There are a few weak spots. Depth is always a question. I didn't have a chance to look at it today, but somebody published an article about the original roster from NYCFC and where are they right now. And I didn't have a chance to look and see how many of those players are on the team just 3 years later. So I'm really anxious to see who these guys are, how they develop. But, you know, there is a checklist you can go down of players that I think have some real quality to them. And it's Johan Venegas and Boston Kadre and Kevin Molino and Francisco Calvo and Rasmus Schuler. Those are all names that I knew, and I'm anxious to see them all play together. Then we have, you know, two huge Minnesota favorites in Miguel Ibarra and Christian Ramirez, who I luckily named – Batman and Superman years ago, and it stuck like crazy. And so we're you know, I mean, of course, we're dying to see them all on the field together. I can't wait.
It's going to be beautiful. As I said, Friday's that first game. They'll come home the next weekend and take on Atlanta United, a couple expansion teams getting down to business. Bruce McGuire will be there at DuNord on Twitter. Bruce, thank you, man. Have a lot of fun this season. I know you will.
Gracias.
Exciting times in Minnesota. I was there, last weekend. And as Bruce said, the buzz isn't deafening, but it's there, and there is a huge soccer community for them to tap into. I'd love to see them get 35, maybe even 40,000 for that first game, Dave, and that could really be a launching point. We've seen those first games kind of capture the attention of the entirety of markets and really drive them forward from there.
And we're going to do our Western Conference preview next week, but I have no idea what to expect from that team, and not in a negative way. No, they haven't gone out and signed DPs, but there's like a lot of talent there. Like Bruce mentioned, a lot of
some
different
dice rolls, certainly. Yeah, but if the dice come up the right way.
But there's a lot of players that could be really fun to watch, and that, I think, can connect with that market because it's not superstar-driven, but, you know, this is the market of Kirby Puckett. And, like, this is Minnesota sports, and I think they could really connect with some of these guys. A lot of, as we've seen, Scandinavian players, mm-hmm. but – you know, Miguel Ibarra and Christian Ramirez became part of the fabric there, and neither of them are from there because of the way they play, how mm-hmm. hard they play, the people that they are. So I think that this is going to be a good marriage between this team and this city.
You mentioned Minnesota fandom. I went to the Wild game. Apparently they've sold out 9 straight years. Years, Y-E-A-R-S. I was praying I wouldn't miss those letters there. But super impressive, and that's not a team of stars either. That's a team of kind of, you know, it's hockey after all, but it's a team, and they've become really successful both on the ice and in the community because of it. Of course, it is a hockey town in large part. We'll see what soccer can do. Soccer is pushing its way into Atlanta. There's no doubt about that. Andrea Bustamante is the outreach coordinator for the Terminus Legion. She's trying to get new fans. She's on the line now. Andrea, how's it going?
How you doing, guys? Thank you for having me.
Yeah, we're doing really well. We're just getting ready for the season. I'm sure you're doing the same. Tell me what it's like right now. What are you doing? What's Terminus Legion doing? What's the feeling on the ground in Atlanta?
Well, the feeling on the ground in Atlanta is that of excitement and just sheer joy to have a team to be a part of and to be supporting. Atlanta has been a place that has definitely been looking for this kind of sport to hit the mainstream here. And finally, we've reached here. With Terminus Legion, we are the largest supporters group in Atlanta. And so therefore we just have decided since 2011, when we started the ATL Once MLS petition, to kind of hit the ground running so that we could get as many fans to support the team that wasn't even here yet. So here we are, 2017, and we are 500 members deep as far as our organization goes. And we just want to represent everything that Atlanta has to give in regards to soccer, and especially with Atlanta United.
Have you been around since day one, Andre? Are you one of these originals? Kind of give me your background with the Terminus Legion and the game in Atlanta.
I am one of these originals. So just a quick little background. A couple of the founding members of our organization, they basically just started it with the idea that they wanted Atlanta soccer here. So the way that I got involved was I actually went to high school with one of the members, Chris Schmidt. We went down to school down in Union Grove, down in McDonough, Georgia. And I saw him at the U.S. Women's National Game versus Russia. And he kind of brought it up to me as the idea of this group that was going to create a support base for Atlanta soccer. And I was all about it. I mean, I've played soccer my whole life. I coach soccer now. So I was all for it. So once they gave me the idea of what the group was about and what we were trying to do, I mean, I just went in head first.
What's the buildup been like since then? How many people are joining? Where do you see them coming from? Ages, geographically, what's been going on?
So as far as a little bit of background with myself, I'm from Costa Rica. I was born in Costa Rica. I came to the States when I was 5 years old, and I moved to Atlanta in 2000. From then, I've actually kind of seen Atlanta grow as a city of what they call the melting pot, per se, where it's just people from all demographics, all backgrounds. Now, the game of soccer just provides sort of a foundation for everybody to just kind of find a common ground and just kind of go with that. So right now, as far as the supporters groups that you see out there, you have people from all ages, from all backgrounds, from kids to elders, You know, I would say that Terminus Legion, we have members that are, you know, children from 10, 11 years old to, you know, lots of older people. It's just a fan base that definitely reaches not only just men, but women, children, Hispanics, Americans, anyone, really any background. So it's really amazing.
And you're the outreach coordinator, so it's your job to get more and more and more and attract more fans
That's
and supporters.
Right.
How are you doing that? Are there any specific groups you're focusing on? What is the push like right now?
So we use a lot of social media as one of our bases to try to reach out to the community as much as possible. So we have not only our Facebook account with Terminus Legion, but we also have our Twitter accounts, both in English and Spanish and Portuguese. So we're really trying to reach pretty much everyone we can with the message that we are a big fan base that's trying to support Atlanta soccer. We do lots of activities where we invite the community to come out and just be a part of what we're trying to do in regards to being a supporters group.
What's been the interaction for you with the club so far for Terminus Legion?
You know, Atlanta United has been very fantastic in being right there where the fan base is from the beginning. I think that they understood that in order to get this team off the ground, that what they needed to do was to definitely incorporate the fan base. And so what they've done is they've taken these supporters groups and really just kind of given us a place, a home, a space on the team. I mean, I don't know if you guys know, but they decided to take the number 17 and give that to the supporters, which that means so much to us. I mean, Martinez, which is one of our players, his number is number 17, has always been number 17. And he decided to give his number up 17 so that the fans could have it, and now he's number 7. And when you look at the lineup online, number 17 belongs to the supporters. So I think that's kind of the base that Atlanta United's trying to do with its fans, and I think that's kind of, you know, a really fun, great thing.
What sort of culture are you guys trying to cultivate? Because, you know, each individual supporters group and each individual supporters section in stadiums kind of has its own identity, has its own vibe. You guys have a little bit of a difficult, or maybe it's a positive thing for you, task because you haven't had something to draw on in the past. There hasn't been a USL team, an NASL team, something of that nature, and although you guys did have the Silverbacks for a long time. I'm not sure how much overlap there is. What will this supporters section be like? Are you organizing chants? Are you figuring out TIFO? What are you doing?
Most definitely. In fact, actually, we started a little bit with the Silverbacks back a couple years ago when they were out there at Silverbacks Park. And we used that's actually how Terminus Legion started incorporating these groups of people together. We started supporting the Silverbacks thoroughly. We would go out there, set up tailgates. We would have the flags. We have the banners. We have the smoke bombs. We have the confetti. We have the chants. We have the drums. We have the whole thing. So that base just translated into a much bigger aspect when it came down to Atlanta United. You know, we have on our website, on Terminus Legion website, we have a chant section where we have about 8 or 9 recorded chants, and they're chants that we use at all of our games. Each supporters group's got a couple of chants that have been translated to all the supporters groups. So when we go out to the game, everyone's doing the same chants. Chant cards are passed around. So the fact is that we're trying to do as much as possible to make the team know that we are there for them and, you know, create the environment that soccer has. As far as the TIFOs go, you know, that is a pivotal point into what soccer is about as a culture and what the team feels when they get out there to see that the team's supporting. TIFOs are one of the biggest projects that we do. Currently, we're actually looking for a location to paint the March 5th TIFO. And, you know, once we get our location settled down, we have this awesome idea. You know how there's really secret, so I can't give you any details on what's coming. But I can rest assure you that when that sign pops up and it's on TV, everyone's going to be super excited.
What can we expect from outside the city watching this first game? Because you have Bobby Dodd Stadium, and then you're going to have the Mercedes-Benz Stadium open up. So you kind of have to plan for two separate things. What should we expect for the opening game of the franchise and then the opening of Mercedes-Benz?
Definitely for Bobby Dodd, I can expect, I'm going to say a sellout crowd. I think that 55,000 is the ticket number that they have allowed for people to be in there, and I think we're very close to selling that out. I think that buzz alone for the March 5th game is just going to generate what's going to be the July 30th game at Mercedes-Benz. And, you know, I've been an Atlanta fan, not only of the Falcons, of the Braves, of all the sports teams here. So it just, knowing that Mercedes-Benz Stadium is going to open up, I think the city is expecting an amazing show for that day. So I think that day is going to be not only as special as March 5th, but probably even bigger, just because that's the official home of where we're going to have our team.
An incredible season in Atlanta, 2017, opening up for MLS. Andrea Bustamante is going to be a big, big part of it, the outreach coordinator for Terminus Legion. You can watch that opening game, Atlanta, New York Red Bulls, 7:30 p.m. Eastern on Sunday on FS1. Andrea, thank you so much for chatting with us. Have fun this year.
Thank you guys so much. I really appreciate it. Hope to have you guys.
Good stuff from Andrea. Excited to see what happens. There's so many season ticket holders in Atlanta. They are going to
sold out opening stadium.
Bobby Dodd. Yeah, they're going to pack that thing. It's going to be an exciting time. I'm bummed because I don't get to go. I was supposed to go, and now I'm not going.
One of the things you see with expansion teams, like Philly's the one I think back to, where it's like you get the boom, like you mentioned with Minnesota in that first game, home game. Then you get the boom when you move to your stadium. Mm-hmm. They're going to have both of those
Double boom in one season.
And so it's like if they can play well and create the energy off that first time, and then, you know, people are going to come to Mercedes-Benz just to see it in Atlanta. But if it's a good team out there that's competitive, that's challenging for a playoff spot, that's playing the way we know Tata Martino's teams have played in the past with this young attacking talent, it could be something really special really quickly. And I think Orlando – was similar. Like, it was 2 months, and you were like, Orlando's one of the markets I want to go to.
Yeah.
And obviously the Timbers were like that, and Seattle and Vancouver and TFC. So it has the potential to be pretty special.
Tune in on Monday. That's when our Eastern Conference preview will roll out. Atlanta, an unknown on the field. A lot of talent. Scoring goals in preseason. Allowing some goals in preseason. We'll see what happens with them. We're going to go to the break. We'll be right back. We're going to be on the other side with Jerry Updike, the president of the Ruckus down in Orlando, and Mike Coleman of Timbers Army to talk TIFO.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime at mlssoccer.com or tweet at extratime radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
On Extra Time Radio, Andrew Wiebe and David Gosser at MLSsoccer.com and SiriusXMFC Channel 85. Purple Rain bringing us back in. Jerry Updike, the president of the Ruckus supporters group there in Orlando, chose it, which is interesting, Dave, because obviously Prince is all Minnesota, baby. And, yeah, you know, we had them in the last segment. We're coming to this segment.
It helps us cover all our bases.
It is connecting all the bases. Of course, Orlando City's new stadium opening up Sunday, March 5th will be the first game there, 5 p.m. They'll host NYCFC, the same game that they started their franchise with. It's exciting. And this stadium, it's gorgeous. The wall, as they're calling it, the big supporters area, looks darn near vertical. It's crazy. It's going to be loud.
Yeah, it's going to be awesome. It's going to be, I think, what every fan wants. And, of course, Dortmund is legendary with their yellow wall and the terrace that they have standing only. And it just goes back and back and back and up and up and up. And it just looks like this amoeba that moves on its own throughout the game. So it'll be cool to see that. Orlando, with the, you know, the weather there and stuff, you can always be out for a game. So they should just... You hope that they'll just be filled all the time.
And Church Street is Tribune.
Yeah.
I don't know why I went French there. Muy bien. Very good. I mean, it's awesome. Their game day atmosphere is going to be really fun.
And Jason Kreis tells us that the roster's pretty good.
Yeah.
We'll find out next week in the Eastern Conference preview.
We will find out. Apparently Carlos Rivas playing up top with Kyle Larin. Looking forward to that one. Jerry Updike is on the line. He's the president of the Ruckus down there in Orlando. Jerry, how's it going?
Oh, not much, man. Just taking it easy. I wish that was true, but not really. A long off season. Looking forward to it finally being the day.
There you go. You guys are going to open up a new stadium. I have to imagine it's exciting. There's no name yet. That still hasn't been announced. At least no, like, naming sponsor. But I have to imagine the fans are calling this something. What's the name that you've chosen?
I mean, they're calling the team just sticking with Orlando City Stadium for now. But, I mean, if you ask any supporter, we all have, like, a million different versions of what we would like the name to be. I know my personal preference is Paramore Park, but I know a couple people, like, there's a big grocery chain in Orlando called Publix, and they would like Publix Park if we were going to pick like a local partner. But
what about slang? What about like worms, what are you actually referring it to? What's like the nickname?
Right now, it really honestly does kind of depend on who you ask. I mean, we're kind of like waiting on bated breath on what it's actually going to be named. I mean, I like calling it the Church on Church since it's on Church Street. And we kind of have that lovely little history with the church that wouldn't work with us on the land.
So the Lions then isn't going to catch on?
No, I have a strong feeling that would be popular with a lot of people.
But let's get into the specifics of the stadium, and the one part everyone's talking about, which I'm sure you're excited about and will be involved with, is the wall. The supporters section, it's going to have this tilt, this angle, which allows you to be right on top of the game to make a ton of noise. What have you guys seen about it so far, and what are you guys looking forward to?
Well, I've been in the stadium a couple times, done a few tours already, getting ready, kind of getting everything in place for how we're going to do things. Some of the new toys we're going to have that we weren't able to use in our old home, the Citrus Bowl. Yeah, there's not a bad seat. I mean, I shouldn't say seat. There's not a bad place to stand in the section. It is so vertical. I joke with a lot of members that I'm wondering if we'll lose random people because of how vertical it is. Like, you first time stepping into it, you will get vertigo. I mean, it is very, very steep, but the view is amazing.
What does it allow you guys to do that you couldn't do before? What's this kind of open up to the Ruckus and the Iron Lion Firm and all these different supporters that are going to pack that in and presumably make this one of the best home field advantages in the league?
There's a couple things. Finally, we have smoke back. We finally got that worked out with the city that we're going to finally have smoke back. And it was always been an important part of our history and how we did things, and not having that with the revitalized Citrus Bowl was always kind of a pain in the butt. So having smoke back is a big thing. We have a rigging system now. We'd always kind of been limited to the type of TIFO that we could do on game days, but now pretty much our options are limitless. So, I mean, we already did things to a pretty high level before, but now it's an entirely new playground to do things with.
When you look at what's going to happen and what this stadium's going to mean, have you seen already a shift in people interest in the city about how the supporters groups feel about the team in the upcoming season?
I can say personally for our group, I ran the Ruckus in the inaugural season, and I'm back running it again this season. We've never had this many people renew or sign up before the first game. So there's definitely a level of excitement there that, I mean, it's always been that way, but even I'm seeing it being a little bit more than normal.
When you mentioned the inaugural season, how long have you been a part of it? Were you around for the USL days?
Oh, yeah. I actually joined up at the end of 2011, became a registered member in 2012. So I've been around for a while. I mean, there's a couple of people there's the original 50 who have been in the group forever that are still part of the group. But, yeah, I mean, I joined in the USL days and pretty much been a part of it ever since.
When you look at the growth of this group and of the fan base in Orlando, and it's one of the great stories in MLS over the last couple of years. What has kind of the progression of the supporters culture been like from your perspective? How have things changed? How have the groups either come together or maybe splintered apart? What's the culture like right now on the eve of this 2017 season for Orlando?
I would say the groups have never been closer. I think we both know that to get where we want to do things, we have to work together. And that relationship's been very, very strong, and us basically raising the bar together. But I think part of it is like the tremendous amount of growth we got in 2015. I mean, going from USL to MLS, there was definitely a huge spike in the number of people who went to games, and our numbers saw a spike as well. So a big thing that's been difficult is trying to maintain those roots of we like being a spontaneous group. We don't want to basically, hey, here's the 14 songs we have, play, repeat every game, like you're listening to your favorite supporter album. So trying to maintain that with a group so big, there's a little bit of growing there, but I think we've done very, very well with it. I mean, it's so much fun. If it wasn't, I wouldn't have done this again.
There are two new teams coming into the league this year. You guys are the most recent expansion along with NYCFC. What advice would you give to those two clubs, fan bases, those two supporters groups, and have you heard from them at all?
And be nice to Atlanta, because I know, Jerry, that there may be a little bit of a rivalry going there already.
Not really. I mean, we have connections to Minnesota. Atlanta, that's kind of like everyone's fear of them kind of doing to Seattle and Portland what they might do to us. Atlanta to me is a mystery. I don't know what to expect because the way that they did season tickets where it's an add-on, it's not actually buying a separate season ticket. I think there will be interest there early on. I'm interested to see how it pans out. I don't know what to think of them. Like, I can easily make fun of them for, well, not actually existing really yet. But I really have no expectations with them whatsoever. I think them opening their season with us in their new stadium, I think they're going to learn a lot from us being there because I don't think they're going to have any idea whatsoever about what this culture can be, and to see how organized we are and how deep we're going to travel. I actually spoke on the phone with the Atlanta ticket rep and he's like, so how many people you think you're going to bring? Like 100, 200? I'm like, dude, we rolled to NYCFC with 2,000. You're only a 6-hour bus trip away. Probably 4 to 6.
Wow.
So I don't think they even know what they're stepping into. So I think there's a bit of they're a little bit naive about the league. But I mean, honestly, just stay with your supporters. I'm a supporter, so obviously I'm going to be in favor of that, but appreciating us and what we do for the game and knowing that there's going to be really, really bad seasons. And sometimes there has to be a little bit something more there connecting the people to the club to make it through the tough times. I mean, last year for us was a rough year. I mean, you had all the stuff going on in the world. You had Pulse. There was a lot of negativity, and yet we came back stronger, and that's because of our culture.
Tell me about what, for you, is so special about that culture. Before we get you out of here, I can kind of hear that in the way that you talk about this, what this means to you, and obviously if 4,000 to 6,000 people are traveling to away days, that means a lot to them too. What's special about Orlando and the Ruckus to you when you're in the stands with your people? What's the feeling?
It's just fun. I mean, like, we're just having a good time. It's like, I always call us a motley group of fools. We're a weird, dysfunctional freaking family that just, we shouldn't get along, but we do. I mean, we have pretty much every cross section of America you can think of in terms of not only cultural diversity, but also financial diversity. It's just to see everyone come together for the same thing. And it's been this way since the beginning. We've always had that cross section of members. It's just, it's a really, really cool thing. I mean, in our own political climate right now and seeing how pretty much divided the country is, to like show up to an Orlando City game and look over to our section and just see like, wow, that's what we could be if we just stopped being pretentious and just literally had fun and embraced each other. Like, that's what I like about our group. We've never tried to exemplify one soccer culture. Our diversity of culture has always been our strength. I mean, we pull from German, English, a lot of South American. We just want to have fun and do things different and put our own stamp on it. Like, we don't want to be a direct copy of some of the big supporter groups that are pretty well known all over the world. I mean, there are things we like, we want to do, but we want to be our own thing.
So first game of the season, new stadium, new setup. It's against NYCFC once again, like 2 years ago. What, from outside of Orlando, what are we going to be blown away by when we watch this game?
Pay attention to the start of the game.
That's
all I'm going to say. Pay attention to the start of the game.
There you have it. Pay attention. That's what Jerry Updike says. He's the president of the Ruckus. Tune in on Sunday, a big game on national television on ESPN. You can watch that one, of course, 5 p.m. Eastern, Orlando City and New York City FC. Jerry, thank you for time in. Have fun this year. You got a lot of years ahead of you. Big thanks to Jerry for joining us here. I think he found a spare room there at his day job, but good stuff from him. He mentioned Vertigo as a place of this wall. He's actually been in it.
Maybe they'll be handing out, what, Dramamine as you enter the stadium?
That's the little prize for everybody. Yeah. Just in case you need it. No worries.
Have you, Have you ever been in a standing room only?
I haven't. You know, they have that down in San Jose. They it sounded like there's a couple more going in.
Yeah, I don't think that I've ever been in anything like that. Obviously, I've been in sections where everyone
was
standing.
Been in a cattle pen before.
I don't know what that means.
It's actual just a pen for cattle. It's
with the cattle or
no,
with
no,
people?
No, 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 no.
What's
I'm
happening
not that
right
Kansas.
Now?
I'm not sure what's happening right now. Let's get to Mike Coleman. He's going to tell us all about TIFO. He is a vice president there at the Timbers Army with the 107ists. That's their nonprofit arm. He leads all their TIFO initiatives. We know their TIFO is beautiful. Mike, what's up? How's it going?
It's going well, going well.
A big season coming up. Of course, the Timbers have the honor of hosting the very first game this season, Friday, March 3rd, 9:30 p.m. on FS1 if you want to watch that. MLS Live up in Canada. Mike, we're talking about TIFO here. I know you're not going to give anything away. We're not going to try to pull it out of you. But tell me a little bit about the operations in general, because over the years we've seen some incredible displays from the Timbers Army. What does this take? Where does the money come from? Where does the time come from to get this thing done?
Yeah, I mean, it's a fairly involved process, right? It usually starts a few months ahead of the match where we have people from the Timbers Army, all different, you know, individuals and executive, you know, board members, whatever, designers, non-designers, pitching ideas. They all have an idea of what would make a great TIFO, and we generally take those, and from a bunch to that, we'll pull a bunch of different things together to come up with an idea. Then we'll work on that, you know, like I said, for a couple months leading into the season. It's all 100% volunteer effort. It's all members of the Timbers Army that do all the work. We even do all the rigging, so when you see us do those big lifts in the North End, it's our guys that have thrown those ropes. And in the, you know, and on the financial side, right, we have the 107 is actually a $25 a year membership, and a big chunk of that money goes to fund TIFO. You know, if you want to be Timbers Army, you already are. If you want to do a little bit more, then people pay us $25 a year, and a big chunk of that money goes to doing those displays that we put up.
You mentioned that technical side, the pulleys, and of course, the park there is well constructed for you guys with the roof hanging over. You're able to get a nice hang from there. The technical expertise always strikes me because, you know, you can't just drag out a sheet and draw on it with Sharpies. Like, that's pretty obvious pretty quickly what it is. This is art. This is truly art. What sort of talent, skills are you drawing from in this big group of people? What are kind of the necessities when you're going around about designing, building, and executing these massive displays?
Yeah, so the guys that do the rigging, they actually had a background in, like, rock climbing, right, and technical climbing. And so that's where we got some information on how you throw rigging and how you use pulley systems and some of that stuff. The art side of it, we have a bunch of really accomplished designers, right, who in their day jobs work for sportswear manufacturers and do catalogs and those sort of things. Like, their day job is putting out the highest level professional quality design work. And so somebody can come in and not be a designer and have a really great idea, but that idea won't scale to, you know, 3,000 square feet of canvas if we don't have a designer to help us put that together. And you can't lift it if you don't have somebody that understands how to do the rigging, how to get the ropes thrown and the spacing and what it takes. But the reality is, you know, it started, you know, 10 years ago with some guys in a garage with bed sheets and Sharpies, right? You don't go into your first match and do a display like Legends, which weighed like 10,000 pounds, and took a forklift to load into a U-Haul to get to the stadium. You don't get there without starting with like bed sheets and Sharpies and, you know, acrylic paints in your garage. And that's where it all begins.
The idea process, how does that go about? How is it shared about through Timbers Army? Does anyone come forward? Is there a group that helps collect ideas?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of them just get emailed to me directly, or they get talked about at the matches, or they, you know, they come through Facebook Messenger or whatever. Like, people hit me up, or they hit other people up. But, you know, there's a group of about six of us that are kind of core that kind of work on all the displays to some degree, right? I do a lot of coordinating, supply ordering. I have other people that are pretty standard. You know, we have a three or four sort of core designers, and people will come to them, and it's just really collaborative. And then a lot of it happens over email or whatever, or at the bar, right?
Oh, yeah.
Around drinking beers, figuring it out, and it just sort of evolves that way. And there's arguments, and there's disagreements, and there's, you know, people who sometimes feel like we made the wrong decision. Thankfully, most of them, I don't think we do, but, you know, it's a collaborative process, but it's not a process without some degree of friction, right? Because people are emotionally invested in these ideas. And I think that's how you get a super high quality display is by fighting it out and really, you know, being critical of every element and making sure that it all fits together and you know, has the right message and the right display elements and all of that stuff.
Give us some time, some idea as far as the time commitment and the financial commitment. You mentioned 10,000 pounds. I mean, just that canvas, I have to imagine, that's hard to source. I don't know if you're sewing it together. I mean, from ideation, you decide an idea, now you have to execute it over the course of that month on average, as you said. How many man hours are we talking here? Because it's not just you. This is a literal army, a timbers army, that's coming together to put this together.
No, it's hundreds of man hours, right? It could be up to 1,000 man hours. We will spend weekends, you know, full days on Saturdays and Sundays painting and tracing and getting everything laid out with, you know, 30 or 40 volunteers from the Timbers Army coming in to help. You know, and then when you do a display, if you look back to, I think my favorite display last year was Nightmares with Freddy Krueger, the Nightmare Sheep, but we did. Legends Never Sleep, I think, was the tagline. The, you know, that display to lift and execute it on game day takes 45 people, plus everybody in the stands had table roll, card display. So in reality, it was over 3,000 people that had to come together to actually make that happen on game day. Financially, right? You know, I mean, we source the fabric from a local vendor. We try to use local vendors wherever we can. Like, we use local paint stores. We use local fabric person to, like, get our fabric and get it sewn together for us. Yeah, and they're not cheap, right? Stuff is not cheap.
Okay, let's talk secrecy here. I know that you're not going to give anything away, but I want to know about how you keep it a secret. Is this like Fight Club? Nobody talks about it? I mean, if you're putting in thousands of man hours, if you have hundreds of people painting, if you have this process of choosing a design, it's not a mystery, so to speak, to a lot of people. And yet when it goes up on a Saturday or a Sunday, we're all shocked. We're all surprised. We haven't seen it. How do you pull that off?
You know, I mean, I think it is like Fight Club, right? The first rule of TIFO is you don't talk about TIFO. And when people come in to do the work, if they're not familiar with that culture, if they're not familiar with that ideology, we educate them, right? If we see someone take out their cell phone, there will be 20 people, unfortunately, screaming at them to put their phone away. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. They get educated. And we've been really lucky that the people that come out to work on the displays respect the culture and they respect the history of what we're trying to do. You know, it's been good that way in that regard. And the other part of it, think about it from a perspective of scale, right? Even if you have 100 people working on the display, the North End where the Timbers Army sits is 5,000 people, right? The stadium is over 20,000 people. If you've got a game on ESPN or Fox Sports 1, right, you've got a couple hundred thousand, hopefully more people watching. The 100 people that worked on it are a fraction of the people that are going to see it. It's really it's a controllable group, you know what I mean, in that regard. So, yeah, with the exception of, you know, we all get really close to it sometimes, and we forget that the audience in the stands, and the most important, actually, are the 18 guys on the sidelines. I mean, at the end of the day, if you're doing TIFO for anybody other than the 18 guys on the sidelines, I don't know why you're doing it.
Put you on the spot here. Outside of the Timbers, what's your favorite TIFO you've seen in MLS?
Last year, undoubtedly, the circus TIFO that they did up in Toronto blew me away. I thought it was amazing. The way they had that reveal with the curtains coming back, I thought the art on it was really stunning. I thought it was a great display. I think that the Game of Thrones TIFO they did in Kansas City last year was exceptional. I thought the art on that was really good. I thought the theme behind it and the execution was excellent. I thought both of those were super high quality displays.
Is there any kind of sharing of best practices between supporters groups in MLS? Do you guys talk to each other about what you're doing, how you're doing it, help push things ahead as far as the technical side, maybe help problem solve a little bit for each other? Or is this a very, you know, we'll handle our house, you handle your house, and we'll look across and admire your hedges, but, you know, ultimately they're yours?
Yeah, I mean, there's not so much, like, on the art side of it. I mean, I've had conversations, especially with up-and-coming supporters groups, right? USL, NSL, groups will call them and be like, how do you do that? Where do you get your fabric? Like, what's, how do you sort that out? How do you, you know, how do you trace it? How do you project it? What do you, you know, and sort of those logistical things. And, you know, that we're certainly happy to share that information with folks and help them, because at the end of the day, I want to see, you know, every stadium and every atmosphere and every supporters group be able to do the best possible displays they can do. I want to see, you know, look, the Timbers aren't always competitive on the pitch. We won an MLS Cup. That was awesome. You know, fell a little short last year. But we always want to win in the stands, and we want that battle. Like, we want that rivalry. We want that in the terraces rivalry with the rest of the clubs in MLS. And I think that, you know, anything that moves that forward is great.
Timbers Army up in the ante, and every other club out there, all these supporters groups doing their thing as well. An exciting year for TIFO and MLS. We're going to look forward to Friday, the opening game, March 3rd, 9:30 p.m. Eastern on FS1. The Timbers hosting Minnesota United FC. Maybe, just maybe, we'll see something rise in the stands. Mike Coleman, the VP of the 107ist, the nonprofit arm of the Timbers Army, oversees TIFOs. We thank you for your time, Mike. Have fun this year. Find some time outside, too, as well. I know that TIFO takes a lot of that free time.
Yeah, my free time outside is sitting in the stands and the terraces enjoying that pitch. But that's good. Thank you very much, and I hope everybody has a great season.
Big thanks to Mike for joining us. It is an undertaking. I mean, you knew that. When you see it on TV, you know that. That's the first thing you think, at least I think, is, wow, logistically, how do you make that?
Like, yeah.
Where did you fold it out? Where did you get all that paint? And he's saying it's 10,000 pounds. You got to forklift this thing around. I mean, this – Mike sounds like he's got a couple full-time jobs here.
Yeah, it's amazing that the time, not time, but the energy that people put in, but the organizations are so much fun to be a part of. I know when I lived up in Boston, I was around some Midnight Riders and hearing about them putting together some of these TIFOs, the ideas, what they do here in New York as well. Now that I lived here talking to some of these fans,
it's
gotta
be political too.
I can't draw. I can't get my life organized enough to do a full-time activity outside of the activities
right,
that I have
right.
to do.
To be fair, you have a lot of activities.
I have a lot of activities, yes.
You do.
I do have a lot of activities. So it's impressive. It's fun to watch. And it's like, I mean, what, 442 had it on its bucket list as go to a Timbers TIFO painting event or mm-hmm. see it get brought up. Like, it's something that's helped grow the league. It's something that's helped show it
no
out
doubt.
There. But it's interesting to hear all of the supporters so far say, talk about the 18. Like, the players on the field and, like, affecting it as much as you can and creating that connection with players. It's not for TV. It's not for us.
Right.
They do this for the fans in the stadium, the fans in the city, but also for the players on the field. And we know the players see it, and we know the players talk about it.
I can't even imagine what it would be like to sit there as a member of the Timbers, look over, and have that message stretching across the entire end of the stadium.
Yeah.
And know and feel throughout that week how much it means, throughout that year, throughout your career in that city, how much it means. And then look up and have a visual representation of that. It's got to just be incredible. Big thanks to Mike Coleman for joining us. We're going to go to break. When we come back, we'll have a 1996 OG MLS fan, Mark Fishkin. Stay with us.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime at mlssoccer.com or tweet at extratime radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
Little shout out to ATL from Andrea Bustamante. We asked for some music. Jerry Updike picked Purple Rain. She's picking, what, this is Young Jeezy?
Yeah.
Okay.
Apparently they have a chant to this song that they're going to be using throughout the season, which the moment this team got announced, I was like, every chant has to be like Ludacris,
right.
T.I., Young Jeezy theme. So I'm fairly excited
about
this.
Fan. I get some Outkasts in there.
Oh, of course.
Yeah, yeah. Two dope strikers with a brace? I don't know. That
Do you want me to edit this out, or
yeah,
are we sticking
no,
with this?
Keep this one. Keep that in there. Mark Fishkin's on the line. He runs Seeing Red New York, at Seeing Red New York on Twitter, seeingrednewyork.com. That's N-Y, not in – I'm not – no more spelling on this
That's
show.
N-Y, but we were discussing last segment about the TIFOs and all the work people put in. Mark Fishkin's been doing Seeing Red for years now on the side of his full-time job.
Right.
Now he's making it his full-time work. He's coming out with daily shows. He needs some support there.
Got
I
some
promise
Patreon
you,
campaigns going. Go check that out.
And it's not just being a Red Bull fan. If you like Major League Soccer, it's a great way to follow the league.
Yeah, and look, Mark's not the only one that does things like that. I want to shout out to all you listeners or anybody out there who puts more time in than they should. And I think we probably all fall in that category, whether it be with your supporters group, with your kids, coaching, blogging, podcasting, wasting too much time on Twitter, all of it. This is what makes soccer culture in the U.S. and Canada so special, and this is why we do what we do and why we enjoy it so much. I know Mark feels the same way. He's on the line now. Mark, how's it going, man?
It's how you doing, guys? It's exciting that the season is upon us, yet another season, and just getting excited to get started.
Yeah, you got a big game coming up here, of course. I should say it's already passed because we're recording this at a different time. So leg one is over of the CCL. Leg two is set to come. I wonder what your mood will be like on that day. We'll see about that, Mark. But let's talk about all the days because there's been a lot for you. You're an original fan of this league, 1996 and on. Take us all the way back. Tell us how you got into the league, how you picked up some season tickets. What was the entry point for you?
Right, sure. So I was an OG NASL fan from back in the day and used to watch the Cosmos play at sold out and less sold out Giants Stadium. And then everything went away. And for a dozen years, it was really kind of indoor soccer, which was all that could sustain the sport in this country, which was okay, but obviously not the same thing. And then 96 came along. I was a single guy living in New York City, and my roommate and I jumped in when the Metro Stars were announced. We had gone to see the 94 World Cup, of course, at Giants Stadium, and we said, there's a team here, it's our team. And we were there that first night for Caracola's wonderful own goal that really started this franchise off on its particular orbit around the soccer world. So that was the genesis.
What was the supporter culture like at that time, the fan culture? You're in the stands. Who else is in the stands?
Were you in the ends, or did you start in the middle?
I started in the middle. Now, you have to remember that the league started, and I know it's been long documented, at the time that the internet was starting. And so the notion of coalescing around a certain interest, there was the old North America soccer list, which was a listserv, which I wasn't a part of at the start. But, you know, at the first game, I was sitting in the middle and I picked up there was a fanzine. Remember fanzines? And it was the Stars and Beyond. And one group had put together a fanzine, I don't know, 16 pages digest size book on this is what this team means and this is what we stand for. And that came out of the genesis of the Empire Supporters Club, which I then joined not the first year, but very, very soon after. So I started in the middle, and before too long, I was behind the goal in 101, singing, chanting, and jumping up and down with those guys, and still a member of the ESC more than 20 plus years later, as well as the Viking Army, and have watched an unbelievable transformation, not just in my team and its fandom, but also obviously the entire league.
So let's kind of go on the spectrum here, because there have been, I don't want to call them peaks and valleys, that's not exactly right, but changes in supporters culture, change in the way fans behave and organize, and just change in the league overall that's added new markets, new fan groups, new supporters groups, new practices, everything under the sun. Tell me about your view as it pertains to kind of the evolution of supporter culture in MLS. What have you seen happen, and what has it led to? Where are we now?
Well, I can speak to obviously my personal journey, and then of course what I've seen across the league, and watching the Metro Stars and then Red Bull supporters clubs grow, splinter, frankly, into different clubs, have them grow, the middle school cafeteria fights between them that happen with some regularity, and the numbers grow every single year. I think it's been pretty terrific to see, and it's not without, as you said, peaks and valleys in terms of certain chants being deemed not too ready for prime time for the league, and the kind of the pushback against that from some of the supporters clubs, and then kind of all of the groups kind of maturing, and I don't want to say professionalizing is the right way, but getting organized. A lot of them are 503c corporations that have massive charity elements to them as well. They're community based, which has been exciting. And then when you look out across the league, as an original fan of one of the original teams, frankly, to watch a lot of the 1.0 teams and their supporters, eclipsed isn't the right word, but nevertheless, they started something. And now, two decades later, watching new teams launch and bloom with a tremendous amount of support. The guys in Orlando are doing an amazing job watching Kansas City's rebrand and what it's done for that. Watching this season ticket base in Atlanta, which by all accounts is going to be one of the largest in the league, just blow everybody away. And so I do look a little wistfully, considering that by and large, I think a lot, not all, but a lot of the 1.0 teams still struggle for relevancy in their markets. And I'm talking DC United, even though their trophies are now a little old and perhaps need some Tarnex because it's been some time for them.
Oh, nice sneaky little dig
Mark,
there.
Now we're going to have a DC fan on because we have to have both sides.
All right, so you got the guys at the Revs who, I've known for years and are still playing in a venue that isn't right for them. The guys in Columbus, even Chicago, you can argue is a 1.0 team that's frankly struggling to gain relevance in those markets. Colorado, Dallas, the fans of those clubs, especially the ones that have been there from the start, are watching the Pacific Northwest teams far eclipse anything that they could have even imagined or even currently imagine. And I think part of that is due to the sports media in those markets treating those clubs as major league versus perhaps the northeastern cities and the relationship with their sports media and how they treat those teams as major league and being very visible in the market. And of course, no blue team fan would be remiss if I didn't mention, obviously, frankly, the successful launch of that team, even though they're playing in a bad venue for soccer.
Mark,
that was very classy.
Very happy to see the growth of the league as a whole. Obviously, my team on the field during the regular season has been very successful. Finally, some trophies. The stadium could be more full. That's what we're trying to do every day with Seeing Red, to get more fan interest. And, just amazement at what's become a true national/continental league with some markets just and their supporters doing incredible things.
Mark, when you look at it, and obviously you're not putting together reports and an expert, but from your personal view, being in this fan group, and let's talk about Red Bulls for these last 20 years, when you see the fans around you and the fans that are involved that you know, demographic-wise, where they're coming from, age, background, economics, what are you seeing? Has it changed a lot? What are you seeing right now?
Well, I think the different flavors of supporters club, at least around the Red Bulls, illustrate the differences in A, the diversity of the market, and B, the diversity of attitude around support, right? The GSU guys are literally a bunch of friends from Jersey who have a unique flavor of support, and they don't necessarily care about, frankly, getting along with anybody, and that seems to work for them. They are among the loudest fans that are there. The ESC is a big tent, English and Spanish chants, which a lot of folks are very, very proud of, that there's the bilingual flavor to everything they do, incorporating new chants. And, the nice thing is after two decades, there's always intake of young kids, and there are a lot of gray hairs like me that are still around, and that the new kids certainly help refresh the club. And then there are the Vikings, that started in 2010, and they are just a whole lot of fun. And for them, the game is a party, and a large Latin American influence there as well. But again, young, old, both sides of the river, a lot of charity focus there. So, it's not just one thing, and that may be kind of a nice analog to the New York market is not just one thing. It's a little bit of everybody. But by and large, all three groups can be incredibly welcoming and open and are looking forward to growing because that's what it's all about. And in fact, there are some supporters that are now outgrown the South Ward as it is and are now drifting to the upper deck of Red Bull Arena. And in a perfect world, you'd have the whole end of the stadium full of chanting supporters.
Mark, one of the best parts about soccer supporters culture is away days, is away games, is trips. What stands out for you as maybe one of your favorite trips or any specific
story?
Give
us some stories, man. That's what
sure.
we want.
Sure. Yeah. So I have never actually been thanked for being a traveling supporter until Portland in 2015, when easily 50 Red Bull fans, I think, made the trip. And we were walking from a local pub to Providence Park, or Your Name Here Park, whatever it is, whatever it was at the time. And don't get me wrong, there are some Timbers fans who, you know, kind of gave us a one finger salute on the way in. But there were others that said, oh, my God, you came out here all the way from New York. Thank you for coming. Now, obviously, as a hardened, wizened, lifelong denizen of the New York area, I was frankly in disbelief, especially having gone to matches in Philadelphia. Obviously tons of games in D.C. and in Philly over my fandom.
They're more into the salutes.
That really kind of blew me away. And then a previous trip out to Portland, lucky enough to meet the leaders of the Timbers Army and got to go into their Timbers Army little clubhouse they have to see the Cascadia Cup up front and to see the unbelievable, frankly, support that they have there and the sophistication of that entire organization. The night before the match, we went to their own brew launch. They launched their own brew with Widmer, the green and gold Kolsch beer. So I got to kind of celebrate a little bit with them on the start of the season. That's when the Red Bulls and Timbers paid an entertaining 3-3 draw to start the 2015 season. So I would say if you're an MLS fan and you have the opportunity to go watch a game there, to have the stadium right in the middle of the city, walkable, trammable, is, you know, frankly quite envious. And it was just a really great trip.
One more for you, Mark, on this fan culture and you've been around for a little while. When you look at the interaction, you're telling the story about Portland Timbers supporters group and your experience with them. Do you find that a camaraderie between supporters groups? Do you find that it's gotten more or less since the beginning, hostile or closer?
Well, you know, as a guy on the wrong side of 40, I personally have noticed, at least with the elder generation, that I can always find opposite numbers, contemporaries in different cities that you can smile with. I mean, listen, I remember a bloody fistfight at RFK years ago with DC fans that was ugly. I mean, really ugly. And I'd like to think that the league has gotten smarter about how to avoid those types of fracases. And of course, there was the sandwich board incident when a couple of guys purporting to be NYC fans, you know, decided they wanted to enter a supporters bar and have a fight. And that's kind of what happened. But I believe the fraternity of MLS supporters is very strong, and sorority. Absolutely, folks, obviously. And so I think by and large, the further away you get from your home market when you travel, the easier it can be. There can still be some static, but at the same time, you look after the Boston Marathon bombing. There was that great Boston and New York dual supporters march to the stadium with both fans and the big New York stands with Boston banner. I think by and large, MLS supporters understand that they're all have their own best interests in mind. And, you know, meeting people from other cities that share your interests is really what it's all about.
Mark Fishkin, the host of Seeing Red, the podcast you've probably been listening to keep up with the Red Bulls for years now. He's also doing it daily at Seeing Red New York NY, seeingrednewyorkny.com. If you want to check out his work there, go check it out. It's good stuff. Mark, thank you so much for joining us. More years, man, more years. Let's keep this MLS March going.
That's the plan.
Awesome stuff from Mark. He's been around for a long time. I have not been around for that long in comparison. I'm a baby. I'm a little guy comparatively. I think 2006 is really when I dug in.
Well, you know, I remember going to Giant Stadium, and then I went to the first game at Red Bull Arena, which I saw Neymar and Gonzo at, which is a little thing that no one ever mentions, that, like, the third best player in the world played at the Red Bull Arena opening game that that Red Bulls won, by the way.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
Jolyn Pair with the goal. But I know what it's been
Estonia.
Like to be around this for a while. And, like, credit to any fan who kept coming out to Giant Stadium in these empty stadiums to watch a team that obviously wasn't winning titles play, but they've been rewarded with Red Bull Arena. They've been rewarded with this team on the field right now over the last 3 years. They've just been fun to watch, whether they've been successful in playoffs or not. Like, you get 6-7 solid months where your team is just putting on a show sometimes out there, open game. So it's been good to watch. It's good to watch for all fans. I mean, you know, KC Wizard fans, and now they're at Sporting Park.
Mm-hmm. The progression has been incredible.
So it's really cool to watch. The league's in a great place right now. I think this season's going to be the best one we've seen. We've talked about it, but The fans are great. The two new markets are great. The TAM players are going to bring a level of play to the field that we haven't really seen before, top to bottom.
The acronym game in MLS really has progressed.
It's
the GAM, TAM.
I think, honestly, so like all sports have their vocabulary, right? But like you sit down around three NFL fans and you start talking MLS, and I think that at some point they'd ask if you were talking about sports.
Yeah, they'd understand.
I don't think they would. GAM, TAM, international slots,
oh, they'd understand.
Super draft,
all this stuff. That's
allocation
all.
Order.
Franchise players, QBR, they have all this in other leagues.
They just named two things.
We're just the experts in this. We want to know what you think
experts.
About 2017 from a supporter perspective. At Extreme Radio, ExtremeNLSoccer.com. You know how to get at us. We got some swag to give away. We always do. Another reminder before we get out of here, the Extra Time Extravaganza goes down next week, leading into March 3rd, opening day, the Timbers and Minnesota United on FS1 at 9:30 p.m. on that Friday. But we'll have five shows to get you ready. Monday, Eastern Conference Preview with Jesse Marsh. Tuesday, how to follow MLS in 2017, all the nitty-gritty details there. Wednesday, referees with Peter Walton. Thursday, we'll check out the Western Conference. And Friday, you know what it is, predictions.
Make sure to join the Fantasy League because me and Weeby talk
yes,
a lot of smack.
We do.
And if you don't join our league, you can talk smack to us. If you do, you can rain down on Twitter on us, and we will accept
it all. And also, I need to talk smack on Kalen Carr and the Armchair Analyst as well. So 12-308 is the fantasy code there. Look, have a great weekend, everybody. We will see you on the other side.
You're listening to Extra Time Radio.